listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
To episode 264 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
So Retroid, what exactly went wrong with your tech last week when we were talking about such delightful things as a Megaverse with Casey Bourne?
So, well, the primary thing was that I had been repairing my arcade cabinet all day.
Uh-huh.
And as a consequence, I had had to move multiple bits of furniture around. So that was a little bit of an issue. That was fun. Because, long story short, when I picked up this arcade cabinet years ago, the monitor in it was quite tired. So I took it out, I put it on top of the cabinet itself, and I got hold of a 20-inch... CRT TV to put in it in the meantime, but I didn't have it hooked up to any arcade boards or anything. I was just using an Xbox with emulators and such in it. But I noticed there were a few cheapy arcade boards going on eBay. Just generally point at the world and go, yeah, that was going on. So I thought, bollocks to it, it's my birthday, I'll treat myself. Yeah.
Fair.
So I got three new arcade boards.
Nice.
Which don't work, but I knew that when I got them. So I got them quite cheap. I got them for about 10 quid each.
Oh, were you saying the previous was episode 262 about sort of checking them out? Or you had at least one by that point that you were going to be doing stuff with?
Yeah, I had I've had two arcade boards that I got with the arcade cabinet. So I already knew everything was there. So I thought, it's been ages. When I first got it, I knew next to nothing about the electronics.
Fair
enough. Other than Devil's Blue Fire make things go.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, these can be nice projects. I can have arcade games on boards, and I can also fix them. Who here remembers how heavy CRTs are?
Yes.
Now think about having to move swap between two 20-21 inch screens. And keep having to lift one out of the way and, lift it out of the cabinet to adjust it and then put it back in,
et cetera, et cetera. My back's hurting at the mere thought.
Yeah. I don't know how I sounded like apart from booming from what you said. When I did try to join, but I was feeling shattered by the end of it.
Yeah.
But because of where everything had been left, I couldn't use my standard setup, which is USB headset plugged into my main PC. So I tried doing it via Steam Link. This was an error.
This proved to be very, very bad for all involved.
Yeah. And then I tried using my Latte Panda, which is a mini kickstarted Windows 10 PC that I kickstarted a few years back. But it's only got 2 gigs of RAM and it hadn't been through Windows Update. So that was a disaster.
Paul's got a HP Pavilion laptop that's a bit like that.
Hmm?
If you leave it for a while and don't update it, it gets grumpy. And then it tries to do updates.
It's in my little netbook.
Yeah.
And
it gets super grumps.
That is literally just a PC for writing, though.
Yeah.
That's all I intended it for.
Mm. Oh, But if anyone's wondering what the unusual noise that in the background, which sounds like a weird mechanical purring cat, it's actually a pressure cooker that's in the process of curing, I'm assuming, some silicon. But for what?
My wife is making some dice.
There seems to be a lot of people getting into dice making at the moment.
Yeah, it's an all nerd household, this one.
Yeah, I know. We watch a YouTuber, and it, I can't remember, is Right Robo or something.
You could probably look at your subscriptions on your phone, and then you'd be able to tell us, because he's cool.
He is cool, and he's all about the dice making.
So what did you say his name was?
Paul's just trying to find out by looking at his subscription list.
Is it going to be Ribonator?
Yes, that is it.
Yeah. See, I don't watch his videos, but I'm often in a room when his videos are watched.
They're very pleasant to watch. He's quite calm in his delivery about his dice-making exploits. It actually makes it quite nice to sort of delve into.
Yeah, and he experiments, which is quite nice. With the what if you put this in?
Yeah. And then is brutally honest about when it does not work.
Mm. Yeah.
I quite liked his...
It's the only way to do it, really.
Mm. I quite liked his one of his recent ones, where he basically kind of created a mould in silicon, but I think he must have coated it with something so that he was able to pour silicon into it.
I think it was like an alcohol mix or something.
Which basically enabled him to... It was just an experiment, but it enabled him to create basically silicon...
Bouncy dice.
Bouncy dice.
Giant D20 that bounces. It's the best. Yeah. I want one.
Yeah, same.
So Mrs. Retroid has her own ideas of, for experiments, and some of them have turned out pretty damn well.
For the science.
Right. Been quite impressed. So it's just as with anything, when you know you've got a little bit of a hobby, you try to work out if you can do anything with it.
Mm.
But so this is what a chilled what we've been up to episode.
Yeah. I mean, is it like a deeply nerd thing nowadays to not just like Star Trek and like, you know, all these kind of weird and wacky things, but to actually go into the more kind of creative aspects of it?
I wouldn't say that I would still say there's a lot of people that don't make stuff in any way.
True.
That their main way they engage with the fandom, if they're not a casual viewer, is that they will, if they do engage, is that they'll take to something like Reddit and or Twitter and just like spiel off loads of stuff.
I mean, I suppose to a certain extent you could kind of create like fan-made productions under that as making something.
Yeah.
It's a very different way than, say, for example, making dice or making...
pissing about with old electronics.
Mm. Yeah.
Or doing the occasion times when I do a geeky knit, which does happen occasionally.
A geeky knit.
Does happen occasionally. It's very,
when was the last time you did a geeky knit?
Probably when I failed to knit a Triforce. I say failed. Yeah. Intarsia, which is the technique involved, which involves basically making pictures out of wool whilst you knit, is really freaking finickety, and the bigger the project, the harder it is to keep carrying it on. And I was like doing it based off like YouTube videos and stuff, and knitting's one of those things where if it starts to go wrong, no amount of YouTube videos is going to help you. But also I don't think a lot of people do things like either write or like make fan art and stuff either. I think a lot of people are quite, other than getting het up about canon, tend to be quite passive in their viewings.
I'm just trying to think of the geeky people that we know, and
all of them are creators.
No, that's true. That's true.
Or like makers. But anyway, so what have people been up to? I suppose, I mean, current events as we record have, you know, escalated greatly over the past week. It's interesting. It's, I think if you haven't seen I think if that if you see something suggesting that you can access content about the issues around people who are of black ethnic origins in various parts of the world dealing with living, that you should take the opportunity to watch those things. Who was it who linked a thing? I'm just going to get Pocket up because I saved it. Somebody like linked or read things. Trying to load Pocket. Where was it? Was it that? No. Oh, cool. It's decided to disappear it. Thank you for that. That's helpful.
But she's looking... You're looking on your brand spanking new tablet.
Yes. But anyway, I wanted to recommend... If you watch something like Black... Do take the chance, if you haven't already, to see something like Black Klansman. Because that... lot going on in it that might help explain some context. There's tons of stuff out there. Like, just look, absorb. Don't necessarily have to comment. In fact, in a lot of cases, it's probably better if you don't comment. You just absorb and think on it, and then say nothing, but do better actions later on. It's kind of the way to go. It's been a dangerous week on social media in the sense of, I say dangerous week, it's just been a week. Like, I hope people are, like, keeping themselves educated about various causes and that, but also making sure that they're not getting overwhelmed and taking breaks when necessary, you know?
Yeah, it's important to look after yourself.
If you've been to any marches or protests, I hope you're keeping safe and healthy as much as you can. Yeah.
And if there are any other statues that need thrown in the sea, let us know.
Mm. Well, not us personally.
No. To be fair, I'm pretty sure Paul and I were discussing earlier. I was like,
well, you say that, but...
Paul and I were discussing earlier, and we're pretty sure we remember some friends of the show sending us... if anyone, it'd be somebody who's been listening for a bloody long time. Somebody like our friend of the show, Martin Lejeune, had sent us, or had shared years ago, like obviously back in 2018 or something, you know, links to, I think, a petition to like about that freaking statue. And we'd signed it. But like, I didn't realise it was still taken over. Like the fact that the freaking wording on the sign hadn't been. And the fact that, I mean, it's quite telling that you've got, I mean, yeah, like, white voices basically saying, like, sort of trying to soften stuff. It was particularly telling. And it's just like, well, this has been going on for a while. And it wasn't even just, like, there's been previous attempts prior to 2018 to get something done about that statue. It just shouldn't be there.
Well, I mean... It's kind of come to something where one of the defenses are basically, oh, they're trying to rewrite history, or, you know, we've put it there to remember. And it's like, there's plenty of stuff that we remember throughout history without actually having it in our face.
But also, it was quite a praiseworthy statue, and a statue tends to be something that's meant to be a pleasant memorial.
Yeah, an honour.
Yeah. Whereas... Yeah,
and that, see, the thing is... What people tend to, not know, because they tend to see a statue like the slave trader statue that was thrown in the harbour a few days ago, you know, here in the UK. They don't just appear; they don't manifest out of nothing. Someone has to pay for them to be made. And erected as a monument.
And for them then to be maintained.
Yeah. And basically, a lot of these statues can be put there by, you know, friends or business partners, or they serve a political purpose.
Yeah. But...
It's just, you know, you want to appear as someone... who had a bigger footprint or is more praiseworthy, or, you know, you... Basically, you buy the praise, especially if you pay for it yourself with some of these statues. As an example, with the Confederate monuments, a lot of them in the US, they were put up years after
Yeah. Was it during is it Jim Crow era legislation stuff going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it basically there to prove a point?
Yeah.
You see, maybe...
So it's like, oh, you're making it political. It's like, yeah, they always were.
Maybe instead of sort of like saying, like admitting that we threw it in the sea, maybe we should have just turned around and said, well, nobody was looking at it. It just kind of, you know, went off by itself. Nobody was looking at it. That's a Doctor Who reference. For the people that think that was just being really weird.
It's like at least I've seen a few interesting conversations about the, you know, the graffiti that was put on the Churchill monument with the he was a racist. He wasn't a racist. He bloody was. He wrote some quotes. Learn some history.
That's the thing. If you turn around, if you have somebody turn around and saying that this person was this, at least listen to the evidence before you go, no, he wasn't.
Yeah. Did anyone see, it's related in a tangential way, the video that was put out by, I forget the bloke's real name, but he plays Keith Lemon.
Oh, I know who you mean.
Was that about the comedian behind apologising for, like, the Craig David stuff?
Yeah, basically the caricatures he did of black people in Bow Selector. And the thing is, so far as I can tell with that, that's unforced. It was completely unforced. It was completely just off his own back. It was him going, you know, it was him having his "are we the baddies" moment. Just, you know, a little bit of introspection with a, oh shit, I didn't realise I did something, you know, silly.
Well, I mean, that would have been... The stupid thing
is, best
that,
silly.
That there would have been people at the time that would have been like, this isn't right. But
I'm not a fan of him because I remember seeing bits of Bo Selector and just, you know, side-eyeing it, extremely side-eyeing it.
Yeah.
With a, you're being ironic, but,
Oh, I've just found the link that I was looking for earlier. So, basically, JSTOR, who, if you're somebody who's gone through certain types of degree, usually humanities ones, tend to have a lot of journal stuff that you tended to access and stuff in the past.
Yeah, I remember JSTOR.
So they did a post at the start around of like last week, which is institutionalized racism, a syllabus. So we will provide a link for that in the show notes, if you wish to purview the content available there. I think one of the weirdest things about all of this is realizing how much people didn't know prior to the past few weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always this this perception that
at least
when
in
people,
the UK,
yeah, when people go to the UK, when people go to the UK.
That's I'm just trying to put context.
When people go to university, that they're somehow kind of being indoctrinated into another way of thinking. And it's like, no, they're basically just acquiring knowledge, which is what you're meant to do at university, and coming up with a conclusion that these
things
are not
good. It's communism factory.
To be fair, though, like, you only learn about stuff to do with history and that if you do like humanities type subjects where history
becomes
relevant. It's like,
gosh darn it, people who know more about the topic they studied somehow disagree with me.
Well, yes.
It's clearly like because they've been indoctrinated, not just because they know what the hell they're talking about.
Well, I mean, considering how many people still have like a, you know, primary school level understanding of sex versus gender.
Yeah.
I mind you, to be fair, there's like primary school kids that have a better understanding than some adults.
True. It's a case of
some of them are multi-million book bestsellers.
I did see your delightful meme earlier about that by you, Retroid.
Which one with the
with the Dolores,
the labelled characters?
Yeah, he did a good meme about the turfy comments from
JK.
Yeah, shamelessly lifted from elsewhere. And I'm afraid because I've not read the books, I've only seen the movies. I know, handed my nerd credentials, etc., etc.
But I mean, like, I got rid of pretty much all my Harry Potter books when I donated all my books to Oxfam.
And you don't feel like, you know, buying new copies?
No, not particularly.
No, it would just give Rowling more money.
Yeah. But I suppose, other than everyone kind of taking information that's been going on over the past week or so, few weeks, taking in lots of information.
Well, what have we been up to? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, like,
we've been reading comments about racism. Turfy shit and racism.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, while the world has burned, what have we tried to distract ourselves with? Is basically the gist.
It is pretty much the gist. I'm still playing Animal Crossing New Horizons. I've seen a couple of articles pop up now, which are kind of along the Animal Crossing, you know, kind of fatigue situation. If I think about it, I've been playing it, since the weekend of launch? So, I mean, how many weeks is that now? I mean, that was March. It's been a long time now.
It's... Emily, it's still March. It's just around about the 101st day of March.
It's not like, because I haven't rushed to do stuff in it. Like, I haven't time traveled. I haven't gone out of my way to, like, track down stuff. I've been kind of taking quite an organic kind of, like, if it happens, it happens kind of approach to the game. I haven't been kind of set out with an agenda to create, like, the perfect island of everything. I mean, according to the game's own system, the island is perfect, is rated 5 stars. But actually, it's quite a sprawling kind of, like, lots of trees, lots of flowers, and maybe some points of interest, including the slightly ritualistic area in the center of the island that may or may not be the centerpiece of a horror film. Who knows?
What, like the giant Wicker Man in mind?
I wouldn't mind a giant Wicker Man to go near that area, actually.
I wish I could have a giant Wicker Man.
I've got, like, the stone arch that you can learn to make in, like, the center, and then, like, some stools, little bits of water, a lot of red and black roses, some pan pipes, some more of the different types of stones standing stones you can make, and some tiki torches, and it all looks very freaking sinister.
Like something was sacrificed there.
Or something might be sacrificed there. Or if you pick up the pan pipes and play on them, you make cool four things into this world of which we should never know and should never commune with. That kind of thing. Right in the centre of my island, with only one bridge on or off of the area. But there's also a family picnic area nearby in case you just, you know, you need to have a chill moment.
Oh, scenic, you see. You're catering for any tourists. The sacrifice will continue over there. You know, drinks are available.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what we should do in Cornwall.
Well, that's terrible.
That is terrible. I don't mean it.
I've still been playing Animal Crossing.
Are you saying Cornwall has a rep?
Sorry, Cornwall has
a rep.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't. Definitely has an internal rep. Much about external. Maybe people from the rest of the country are like, oh, those Cornish people are lovely. And then the Cornish are like, we fucking out hate outsiders.
Hate or ate? Because I couldn't quite tell that.
Maybe one than the other.
Have either of you seen American Werewolf in London?
Yes.
You know that bit where the American tourists walk into the pub right at the start?
Yes.
That's my impression of Cornwall.
It does get a bit like that.
It's accurate, even if you're basically from Cornwall.
And you just go into the wrong pub.
Yeah, go into a different pub that you've never been in before.
You're not from this pub, you know.
The music just stops. And it's like,
I'd like to say, I'd like to say, for the record, I was not doing a Cornish accent. I was just doing a threatening yokel.
Threatening yokel, okay.
Hey, why don't you try it, Emily, with your Cornish accent?
I don't have a Cornish accent.
But you can put one on.
Not on command.
Not on command?
No.
Oh, come on, you can do it. I believe in you.
Literally cannot.
Come on, please.
No. I have to either be incredibly angry or incredibly drunk, and I'm not drinking at the moment, so...
Drink.
We do not have time for this podcast imbibe the amount of alcohol needed.
Graham Lynham as well.
See, that is the problem, because I can occasionally maybe, you know, slip into a bit of local. But by general, I don't. By general, I am asked in my home city where I come from. So, yeah, I can relate with you can do the accent. I bloody can't.
Meanwhile, another Animal Crossing news. New fave islander to the series, Sherb, moved onto my island last week, and he is adorable. He's this blue goat. He has the lazy villager personality type, but he's just adorable. And it's just like, and he has like the cute kind of like item set in his house, and it's just like, oh. All he wants to do is just chill the fuck out, and it's fabulous.
Seems appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, merely my island's mostly, I think I've got, I'm just counting in my head, I think I've got three jocks living on my island. No, wait, four. I have four jock islanders.
You've got enough for a team.
Yeah, we could play five a side, you know, I only have
one jock on mine. And by the way, this is a sideways thing of me saying that I have a Switch at the moment.
We'll have to add you.
You allowed Nintendo into the house.
Yeah. Well, that needs an online pass, doesn't it? And they can get to hell with that.
Well.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I've basically got Emily on my the family pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, because I've got Emily's brother on the family pass as well, and it's mostly to kind of play online with him. Not that that's happened much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea how many people can be on a family pass or anything like that.
I think it's five, but I'm not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've just been playing Animal Crossing.
So, can you kind of visit other islands and have others visit you if you don't have a Nintendo membership?
You can only do that via local
Wi-Fi. Yeah.
Ah.
So you have to have online for it.
Fair.
So it's basically using like a you know, system link Wi-Fi rather than
But online. But there's a lot of people who. There's a couple of sites that have definitely sprung up in the last few months that are all about maximizing kind of like trading and item collection opportunities. So you've got stuff like turnips.exchange. And there's like a couple of us. I say that one because that's the one I use. I find their service quite cool.
Yeah, Turnips by Goldman Sachs.
I've made... through using sites like that, like, because you've got the whole turnip stalk market thing that happens every week, starting from Sunday. Buy turnips, make lots of money.
I was just going to say, you know, the reason I mentioned that I only have, you know, one jock on my island, it's because he's a hamster. So, the effect is kind of negated.
Okay, that's fair.
I'm fine with the jock hamster. Because it's just, sure you are, yeah, whatever.
I've got, like, jock cat, two jock birds, and a jock pig.
And I've stayed away from Animal Crossing.
Yes. Yes, you have.
What you mean to say is, you hate Nintendo now. That's what I heard. Unlike me and Emily, the proper fans.
Oh no.
The gate, it slammed on my face.
Wait, you've been playing Trials on your Switch though, didn't you buy it the other day?
Yeah.
Which version of Trials?
I think it was Trials Uprising. But wait.
So how far did you get into it? Did you just do a little bit?
Yeah, because I mean it was late when I downloaded it. Haven't really had much of a chance to play it since. But yeah, it's quite fun. Ragdoll physics, you know, quite nice. Obviously, kind of going along, like almost like on a 2D plane, but like it's in 3D. So it's kind of bit weird in that respect. Yeah. 2.5D.
Let's see. Just to verify, this is the sort of motorcycle stun.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Course that, yeah. Yeah. I got that on 360. You know, when it first came out, and people were, you know, raising hell about it and going, "Yeah, it's excellent. You've got to get it." And it was like, eh.
To be honest, I mean, I remember in college when I think we had to kind of sneak around to play games because there was actually admin that, you know, was cutting off people's access to.
I mean, I'm pretty sure at some point, at least when I was at college, a different one to you, that Unreal Tournament might have got installed on a bunch of machines.
Oh, yes, we had that as well. But yeah, I think that was a game that was pretty much like a proto motocross type thing. Where you kind of have like a line, might be like Line Rider or something, I can't remember exactly, but yeah, kind of a basic, you know, guy on a bicycle or, you know, cycle or whatever, and basically going up and down, you know, the level and just having to kind of balance and not fall off, really.
Mm.
So, yeah, it's quite fun. I mean, I got it because it was on special offer, and I was like, you know, I kind of fancy giving that a go, see what it's like. And I did.
Yeah.
Hurrah.
Yeah.
We were saying, kind of saying earlier, yeah, I bought a new tablet at the end of last week. I realised that there's a lot of stuff I've been trying to read digitally, and I've been doing it on the tiniest phone screen imaginable.
Well, I mean, probably
but by today's standards, small.
But, you know, by like Nokia 3300 or something like that, then.
Well, no, that's slightly bigger, but it's like it's still small for a smartphone. And so I picked up a Samsung tablet cheap last week, and finally got access to things like my old Comixology back catalogue, which I haven't touched in years, but still all accessible. Stuff like, because I sort of like magazines and newspaper stuff that I subscribe to finally, so it's actually a lot easier to read. And then I was like, oh, wait, but library stuff. So I downloaded our local library systems, like local like digital service provider app things. We've got two. We've got like one for books and audiobooks and one for like magazines. And that means that I can, because I have a library card and I can access stuff. And that's the thing. If you're still kind of like wherever you are in the UK, if you're in the UK, if your local library service is actually subscribed to digital service providers like BorrowBox or RB Digital, and there are other services out there, you haven't actually been able to borrow anything, and you're running out of stuff to do or read or listen to, you know, as long as you've got a library card, you could download those apps and activate all of that without having to go near a library. Some of them actually also work on website versions, like on a regular browser. And then the other thing to note is if you don't have a library card, a lot of library system providers, at least at the council level, they're helping you apply online and at least giving you like your card number and stuff so you can start digital borrowing as needed at the moment. So that is something to keep in mind.
I would like to say that because you bought that tablet and I got you the case for the tablet.
Mm.
How are you finding that case?
I'm finding it a little better. The tablet is quite thin and slippery to slippery. Hold on to. Like, can't really get a grip on it. But with a case, a proper nice rubber case, sort of rubberized sort of silicone case on it, it's a lot, with a strap as well. And a stand. It's a lot easier. In fact, I used it with a stand at the weekend so that I could have move between a salsa and a guacamole recipe whilst I was making them. So that was cool. I'm looking forward to doing more cooking, baking things with actually having a decent screen that stands to actually look at whilst I'm cooking, and hopefully not covering the technology in errant foodstuffs.
Errant foodstuffs.
Very errant foodstuffs. But aside from arcade cabinets and Animal Crossing Retro, what have you been up to?
I'm still watching The Untamed.
How far into that are you?
I think we're episode 39 or 40.
Okay, so you've got like 11 or 10 episodes.
Out of 50.
Yeah.
And I'll give you this, there's quite an arc.
How easy is it to follow? Because I'm assuming it's subtitled.
Sorry, what?
Is it? How easy is it to follow? I'm assuming The Untamed subtitled?
It's relatively easy to follow. I mean, the first episode starts off with a flashback and then the current day, quote-unquote. And then the next 30-odd episodes are set 16 years previous.
Mm-hmm.
So, you see where something is going right at the start. And then, you're basically told, how it gets there.
Okay.
And the way it's, the way it's presented, you think that, someone's a great evil. And then, of course, you find out that it's not as simple as that. I'm trying not to be spoilery because I do recommend this. This is quite a good series. And then, to my surprise, because I thought, if something starts with a flashback, you kind of expect that, it will catch up with itself right near the end. But it was actually episode, 35 or, around about then, where it caught up with, this big pivotal moment. And I was quite surprised that it took that approach, because now, of course, the series is, set after, all this has gone on.
Okay.
So, basically, because it's not a spoiler, it's in the first episode.
Yeah.
What you see is, a character dressed entirely in black with, bloodshot eyes. And it's just in this this setting which is surrounded by lava, so it looks quite apocalyptic. And there's a character lunging at him, with the sword, and this character dressed entirely in black just sort of looks at them and then falls off this this cliff.
Hmm.
So you would think that's quite an evil character who's been vanquished. And then, of course, you find out, the way it goes from there. I'm quite enjoying it. I get the feeling that, as has been borne out by, a few other people have said, if watching a series like The Untamed, with it being on, on Netflix, and it's just, it's there to watch. It's,
yeah.
There you go. If you watch something like that and you think, well, I want to see more, then it's either going to show the probable, derivative nature of, this one, in some respects, because there are tropes in it. There's the, there's a different evil character who is, sits atop this jagged throne made of rock. And plots evil things, but they aren't the eternal evil in the series. They get vanquished about halfway through. So it throws because it's like here's a big trope. We will now do something different with that. Here's another big trope, and we will just that's gone. That's absolutely gone. But I'm just not sure about watching any other big sort of Chinese magical historic whatever.
I mean, not historic.
You want to use for these.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not historic because last year I tried watching I think it's Guardian.
Hmm.
And it was quite tricky. to get into, to say.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the best, and this is I will say in a hand on heart that I am not a fan of this that I am comparing it to, but it's just like shorthand. So, you know, when I say about, you know, magical fantasy, think Merlin, where it's set in British history, but it's clearly not factual because there's a bloody wizard in it. You know, and you know all these other things, and you know the all these other characters. But yeah, it's just sort of, you know, historical magical fantasy with, you know, clans and such. And yeah, I've not reached the end, but it's been pretty good. We've had about two or three episodes that have been set in a place called Coffin City or Coffin Town,
as in a casket or to cough.
Coffin, okay. As in they prepare the dead, okay. So that, you know, that's what this clan does.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything's all gone to hell, and lo and behold, a character that, you know, we last saw about 15, 20 episodes ago, you know, has cropped up, and lo and behold, he's a bit mad.
Okay.
So, yeah. Been quite enjoying it. If you've been, you know, put onto it by the shippers.
Oh yeah, well that came up. Yeah.
It's not a hugely overt thing. If you want, you could ignore that. It's not, you know, with it being Chinese, it's not.
It's not in your face.
It's not in your face.
Because they can't
resist. So, you know, there are, you know, you can clearly see there's, you know, there's chemistry between the characters, but you can do, you know, with, you know, what you want to do with that is entirely up to you. But there's a lot more going on besides. And yeah, I'm really quite enjoying it. It's put other series I've been watching on the back burner for now because I want to see how this finishes. And that's just about the highest praise, because there are so many other series where it's been, you know, you know you've got to watch this, it's good. And I have done for, you know, X number of episodes, and then I've just completely fallen off it and never gone back because I don't care. Because with this I do, so.
Okay.
Been quite enjoying it. I was going to say, you know, otherwise, you know, for other things I've been doing, been getting annoyed with some friends on Facebook, or, you know, should I say acquaintances, you know, of, you know, the general thing that's going on in the world at the moment, and they're, oh no, it's all a big conspiracy by the leftists. It's like, oh dear. And otherwise, I managed to knock the house's electricity off just before we came on air.
Oh, so is that why we were waiting a little while? It was just,
yeah, that was one of the reasons, because we had to dig out the downstairs cupboard so I could flick the, you know, the master fuse box back on.
Oops.
So that was good, but yeah, that was me. Because my, again, another long story short, because all my electronic stuff is in my shed, because then, you know, I can just do with it as, you know, as I will, and leave it in, you know, for my use. I don't have to, you know, worry about anyone else or any cats or anything. That's where all my repair stuff is, and seeing as I've got a few faulty arcade boards, I need to be able to, you know, use them down there. But they aren't on SCART, to put it lightly. So you need to make an interface which will give it the voltages it needs, and also get all the video signals. And, you know, video and audio signals these boards send out and yet, and also have things like insert coin and joystick control and, you know, the action buttons. So they're called, there are two names for them. One is a jammer to SCART harness. And the other one, which I've always thought was a little bit weird, some people call them super guns.
Sorry, what?
Super guns.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know either. I genuinely don't know. But they're almost RGB SCART. You know, for anyone who's familiar with that interface, but they're not quite. So I've been trying to build one for myself in my shed so I can test the arcade boards and, you know, do twiddly fiddles with the electronics. But apparently the power supply I was using expected more of a load put on it, because I'm having to use a PC power supply. But it's not in the case, so I'm having to kind of cut some wires together and then, you know, jury rig it so I can use it as a big power supply that supplies different voltages.
Okay.
But yeah, apparently it wasn't happy with what I was doing with it. It blew the fuse in its own plug, which then tripped the the plugs in my shed and tripped the master fuse box in the house. But the important thing is my copy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles by Konami still works absolutely fine.
It's okay. Gold.
Which, by the way, just to make me feel older, I remember playing it in the arcade with my friends and going specifically to Blackpool to play this in a game, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And it was made in 1989, so it was when you were 3.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah, I'll just go and curl up and cry in a corner now while you discuss things. It only came out about 5 years ago, I swear.
And March is over 100 days long, right?
Well, okay. you must admit March is over 100 days long.
I suppose. So what have I been doing aside from Animal Crossing and messing around with a new tablet? Oh lordy. I finally watched, I really, really felt like watching a horror film on Saturday night.
Watched the news.
a fictional horror film. Went diving onto Netflix and ended up picking out Insidious.
The news.
The news. Which is 10 years old this year. Came out in 2010. It's had loads of sequels since and tends to appear on a lot of lists that include more sort of modern horror films. Keep in mind that of the horror films that we do have in our house, most of them were filmed before 95.
I'll just curl up tighter into this fetal ball.
Paul didn't really watch it so much as I did. And I thought it was an interesting concept they had there because it's in the description. So basically they think that this family thinks their house is haunted, but actually it turns out that it's something going on with one of their kids. And it's not like it scared me. This is the thing. Like, an issue I have with a lot of horror films is that they don't tend to scare me because it's just not the kind of horror that would. I'm trying to think what was the last horror film that scared me. It's been a while.
Are you more like me in the horror films where jump scares are completely pointless, but if something has a definite sort of air of dread, that's what gets to you?
A little bit. All I know is that I fall asleep during the original first two Hellraiser films. I can get a bit squeamish, not scared, but just kind of like, oh, I don't want to see all that gore. If something gets particularly bloody. But I mean, I've got like the original Wishmaster films on disc. Like, and you know, cheesy stuff like that, but then stuff like a load of Ramirez films. Speaking of, I may have pre-ordered, and I hope HMV doesn't fold in the meantime, but I pre-ordered a...
To be fair, it's a real risk.
It is, but hopefully they won't. But I pre-ordered a Tim Box Collector's Special Edition of Dawn of the Dead that's being released in October. Mm. Dawn of the Dead is like probably one of my favourite horror films, if not my most favourite horror film. And this edition's got something like 3, if not 4, different cuts of the film. Plus like a whole load of behind the scenes stuff, a load of like books and things included with it, and music and stuff. It's like sort of collector's edition for like I think it was like £67. There was a lot going on, but because it's like a film that's got such a big place in my heart, like I was like, yes, I'm gonna treat myself to pre-ordering that, and then maybe I'll have a nice surprise come October, just in time for Halloween. Probably won't be able to watch it with anyone, depending on how things are going. To be fair, a lot of our friends don't like watching horror films.
No, that's cool. If you could. Have you seen the original Ring?
Yes.
As in the Japanese
version? Yeah, I had to study it on my degree. We looked at it as part of our Gothic and Grotesque unit. Because it's got obviously both of those things going on along with a side of horror, and also a little bit of kind of like sort of like horror to do with like living. So I mean, it's not quite urban horror. It's kind of got like a weird kind of urban to like suburban kind of location thing, slightly rural going on. It's been a while since I watched it, but
yeah.
Yeah, okay, so maybe some stuff from that scared me, but that was, like, over 10 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, I'd be scared if I watched that again. Or even stuff like Audition.
See, I've heard that mentioned, but I have yet to see it.
I know, I think Audition... Oh, who was it? I think Last Exit to Know we was talking about Audition the other day. I can't remember why. It's probably just about films that really kind of like threw you, I think was the idea. But that, I mean, there's definitely some stuff that's been brought. The issue is, I suppose, is like, it's the whole idea of kind of like you said, dread, fear of the uncanny. And stuff like that, and that perhaps,
yeah, that's what works for me.
Yeah, that tends to be what works for me. However, if it's something that's too paranormal, because I've now watched like over the years, like stuff like Buffy the Load and Angel, Supernatural, stuff like Hex and the UK, like anything where basically like the various bits of lore about how to deal with paranormal beings. Is there, and then nobody seems to know. It's the kind of the equivalent of a zombie film where nobody has any idea of maybe how to start dealing with zombies. You know, obviously,
yeah,
dealing with the head. And they're like iron, salt. Oh, what are these things? Like nobody thinks to go for them. It's like, just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it's just...
If they pull out a Bible, that's usually a good step. But, or other religious texts, you know.
Yeah.
But that rarely happens. In fact, obviously, Bible stuff tends to happen when it's a film that's more directly about demonic possession anyway.
Now, here's one. Have you seen the original, I think, was it called Wreck?
No.
But you know the one I mean?
No.
It's the one where there's a film crew goes into... the original one is Spanish.
Okay.
There was an American remake, which was actually quite decent, starring What's-Her-Face, the sister from Dexter.
Oh, yes. I know who you mean.
Yeah. But, you know, we watched the Spanish one, and the general gist is there's... You know, like like a gas leak or, you know, or like an illness, and it's all, you know, don't go in there. And there's an investigative film crew who thinks there's a scoop. So they, you know, get into this apartment building, and it all starts going very badly indeed. Where they're like sort of, you know, the Rage zombies.
Oh, yeah.
But in weirder. And so, you know, we watch that. It's quite good. It's kind of a sort of a found footage thing, because it's all supposed to be, you know, footage that was filmed by the crew. And then with, oh, well, you know, that was good. We enjoyed that. We'll get hold of the, you know, the sequel. Because, you know, they made a Rec 2 in, you know, in Spanish. And that one, the main thing that I took away from it was they seem to have decided that it's going to be demonic and, you know, to do with the Catholic Church.
Okay.
And that, to me, just, you know, took away a lot of the weirdness for it. Because I think they just, you know, made this original film, and they didn't, you know, they specifically didn't say, you know, what it, you know, what was going on. And then when it came to the sequel, they just decided, oh, well, you know, we'll go all in on this explanation. And yeah, it was just, doesn't really work. So that was a bit disappointing. But yeah, the original Rec, I would recommend. And even the American remake.
Okay. Paul, what have you been up to? Other than trials? Yeah. There's been some D&D plotting going on, hasn't there?
There has.
You got another session to run to push us through to, are we going to die?
Well, why would you die? Well,
are you saying you're a benevolent DM?
So have you seen what's going on the planet?
it's kind of not up to me if you die, to be honest. It's up to our own stupidity. You make it sound as though I'm like God in this world. I mean, the whole point of D&D is not that you're basically playing through a narrative that the DM creates and you have no control whatsoever. The players have control of their characters. I just control the physics of the world, as it were.
But if we make fun of Nintendo, we will end up in trouble, won't we?
Of course, you know I would have to.
No!
Well, we will end up in trouble, or we won't end up in trouble.
You won't end up in trouble. Did you listen to my last point?
I'm sorry. Maybe.
I know. There's a
stereotype about DMs.
I know there's a lot. There's kind of D&D has kind of grown into. Arguably, it's always been a kind of form of culture, but I feel like it's kind of got out there a bit more now with you know, all sorts of stuff actually kind of reference it in, like, you know, like films and TV series and whatnot, and it's become more and more popular, and that there are certain, you know, things that people think of when they think of, like, specific D&D classes or the, you know, the role of the DM or anything like that. And it's some of it's true, some of it's just like, no, that would be boring to play if that was true.
Hmm.
You know, like the whole concept of the bard basically just trying to seduce his way through the campaign, that would be kind of boring to play, because the character would be just so predictable. And you don't want predictability.
Unless you're trying to survive.
What if the bard is called Kirk?
That's a good point. What if they're called Kirk?
If the bard is called Kirk?
If the bard's called Kirk.
The bard is... Was Kirk much of a musician?
Yes. No, he wasn't much of a musician, but he would sleep with anything and everything if at all possible.
Yeah, I don't think the class of slut is kind of in D&D there. It's bard, which is music
that.
With, you know, promiscuity. But
yeah, but then Dandelion in Witcher.
Mind you, I mean, before we get through D&D on Friday, there's the... Are we going to stay up for the Thursday PS5 announcement thing?
I know, it depends.
Is that not 9?
What, 9 p.m?
Yeah.
Well, that's hardly staying up.
It depends how long they go on for.
They're not going to go on for more than 2 hours.
You'd hope.
I'm pretty sure they won't go on for more than 2 hours.
So, wait, there's going to be a PS5?
Yes.
You're going to be able to play D&D on it? No, I'm just kidding.
To be fair, you never know if like whoever's got the rights to produce like D&D universe-based games at the moment decides to put one out on that generation.
But yeah,
but it's more likely to be on PC.
But yeah, yes, I have been sorting out like D&D stuff part of the week. You know,
you've gone so far as to get yourself two different types of corner puncher, haven't you? At this point, for your, the cards that you print out for yourself,
for my organisation.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's yes, yeah. Quite frankly, because I mean, there's character cards which are designed to help me maintain a sense of continuity when I'm playing the different NPCs, and there's mission cards which are designed to help me, you know, kind of remind players of what they're meant to be doing, and you know, kind of having them as active or inactive, and you know,
showing me... Look, for God's sake, stop trying to fight the rats. You're supposed to be going to the Citadel.
Well, I mean, at the moment, the campaign, well, the players have several quests going on. Some of them in their infancy, some of them kind of a bit more. So at the moment, they're planning a heist, or they've kind of planned a heist, and they've kind of got stuff together, and they're kind of almost ready to go with it. But yeah, there's still kind of plenty to do in the town, or rather the city that they're in, which is the main kind of city in the continent, really. It's kind of got a control of the economic aspects of the continent. But yeah, it's a homebrew world. And it's been quite fun to build. And yeah, so to be honest, I'm kind of wondering like how much of it's going to be kind of set in this one city, because you have to kind of explore the rest of the, at least the rest of the continent, and then onto the other two continents.
Cool. There's a lot of world is what you're saying.
There is a lot of world. This could go on for the next decade.
To be fair, like our other D&D games been going for more than what, 3-4 years at this point?
True.
So, you know, that's not...
Yeah, I mean, one of the key things is to basically provide a world for you to explore that's actually kind of feels genuine and not kind of made up on the spot, but also allow you to make decisions that affect that world. Because the last thing that I want to do is kind of railroad you into, you know, kind of one path, which then you're either kind of enjoying or not enjoying, and you don't really have a say in what's going on.
Okay.
Which, you know, I kind of don't want to do. I want to kind of let you kind of explore a bit more. And, you know, hopefully I'm, well, so far I feel like I've provided at least, you know, kind of some decent cultural bits and bobs that you've...
There may be events in the story that seem to ring to similarities with current events in the world, and it's not the pandemic.
So do you want to kind of explain that as a player character?
So in our traverses through this initial city, we have encountered a poor orc who has been wrongly accused of murder just because he happened to be a convenient patsy for the crime. Our characters are generally most of us seem to be ranging towards the side of good, if not at least chaotically.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And we weren't particularly happy about this because we're not natives to the city much, so we don't particularly like their ways. And after we've dealt with the situation, we can't do anything with it at the moment due to stuff in game, in terms of the system won't allow us to go near him and defend him. But we're going to be stirring some shit up.
And when you say the system, you actually mean the political...
Yeah, the political system in-game. Yeah, like
judicial system.
We can't gain access to the individual currently, yeah. But we will.
And you went to the slums, as it were, where the orcs are, to try and track down a talking sword, or, you know, information about the talking sword. That will give the location to another character's partner.
But stuff's going on, and it's going to get interesting.
Yes, yes. And I invented orc poetry for this.
Don't recite.
I won't recite, but, you know, there are certain kind of rules within orc poetry that is fun, I'd like to think.
I'm assuming it's because it sounds weird to us, though, because they're translating from... What's the native language for orcs?
Orcish.
They do have orcish as a language.
Orcish.
Yeah, so into common is like... I bet it sounds better in orcish.
Everything sounds better in orcish.
Mm.
But, yeah, I mean, the basic rules of poetry are that it's kind of three-word sentences kind of strung together, quite simple words with an expletive at the end.
Oh, lovely.
You did not notice that?
Did a bit,
okay.
Yeah. Well, I think that's all we've got time for this week.
You're ending on the orc poetry.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck is this?
I mean, I was perhaps remotely reminded of Vogon poetry when you read it during the last game session.
But what was it? Not Elric. Is it Elric McWhorter? Yeah. He promised to get this young orc's poetry published. That will not be forgotten.
Mm. Alright, so that
but
is...
Yeah, fun times.
That is all we've got time for this week. So it is good night from...
It's good night from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
It's good night from me, Paul Blurt. I'm on Twitter at Paul Blurt.
It's good night from me, Emily King. I'm on Twitter at EMKingMA. You can find notes to this episode over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're on Twitter and Instagram at NerdsPodcast. We're on Facebook as Nerdassemble Podcast. You can listen to episodes if you haven't already on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. And that's it. So good night.
Good night.
Good. The world has rolled up one.
Shit.
Do we have advantage?
No.
Fuck.